From a studio high above the clouds of the Okanagan Valley, this is the Cannabis Podcast. Exploring the world of Canadian cannabis culture, one toke at a time. Now, here's your host and bud tender, Gary Johnston.
And let me welcome you back to the Cannabis Podcast. Thanks for coming back one more time. Maybe this is your very first time. Well, if it is, let me give you an especially warm welcome. Ahead, we've got 30 or 40 minutes of information about a plant I am absolutely passionate about, and that is cannabis. Before we get too much further, let me remind you this program is intended only for those 19 or older in your jurisdiction, and is intended primarily for entertainment and educational purposes. You should always consume your cannabis responsibly. In episode 149, we have a couple of perspectives on the recent update on the Cannabis Act Review publishing. Health Canada has completed their review of Edison Jolts, determining whether they are an extract or an edible. Which do you think they chose? The government received warnings about the state of the cannabis industry. A couple has learned a rather expensive lesson for being careless with their Halloween treat. And we're going to stop on Cultivar Corner for Salt Spring Love Haze, grown on Salt Spring by the Magi. All of that and more on episode 149 of the Cannabis Podcast. And I apologize that there's a bit of a sound of a cold in my voice today with this episode. You'll see that in some pieces because some were pre-recorded when I didn't have the cold. But I think I'm in still fine enough shape that we can get there. I want to thank you for being a listener. Thank you so much for being here. I truly appreciate it. I also want to thank my subscribers at buymeacoffee.com/cannabispodcast. If you feel so inclined and you like what you hear, you can go there too and buy me a doobie or be a subscriber like Jordana, Kevin, and Jordan are. And I also want to thank my subscribers at Patreon, Roger, Tony, Gage, Rob, and Lloyd. Thanks so much. I truly appreciate your support. And as I often do in the Cannabis Podcast, when events occur in my real life outside of the actual podcast, I like to share them with you. And this is such an occurrence. Please help me welcome my newest grandson to the world. Flynn William was born on March 26th. Welcome to the world, Flynn. His parents, Rochelle and Sean, are doing excellent. His big sister, Fiona's doing really well, too. Welcome to the world, Flynn. We're so happy to have you in the family. The inspiration for today's episode is from J-Buds down in Summerland. Their Quantum Kiwi. Delightful little sativa gets me fired up to do the episode. And this story is coming to us from mjbizdaily.com, and it's one of a couple we have on the Cannabis Act Review. This is written by Matt Lamers at MJ Biz Daily. A government-appointed panel of experts analyzing Canada's adult-use legalization law, the Cannabis Act, has recommended the country enable pharmacy access for medical marijuana and reconsider how excise tax is applied to recreational products. The proposals are part of a final report, 18 months in the making, that lays out 54 recommendations and a number of observations for the federal government to consider. Some of the recommendations align with industry expectations, such as allowing pharmacies to sell medical cannabis products, which the largest pharmacy chain in the country, Shoppers Drug Mart, had been calling for. Canada's cannabis industry expressed disappointment with some other recommendations and omissions. For instance, the panel called for the government to maintain the limit of 10 milligrams of THC per edibles package, which businesses have long derided as a gift to the illicit market. The report also acknowledged barriers and challenges facing First Nations, Inuit and Métis communities, and entrepreneurs, citing MJ Biz Daily research about their exclusion from the Cannabis Act. This has led to significant public health and public safety challenges in many communities and inequitable economic development opportunities, according to the report written by Chair Morris Rosenberg, a former deputy minister under two federal governments. There is an urgent need to re-engage on these issues, consistent with the Government of Canada's commitment to recognize the rights of Indigenous peoples and with a shared commitment by all parties to protecting public health and public safety. None of the panel's 54 recommendations are binding, and it's unclear to what extent the federal government is committed to implementing them. Moving forward, according to the report, it will be important for the Canadian government to allocate appropriate funding and resources to ensure the effective implementation of the cannabis framework. Canada's federal government alone employs hundreds of people to regulate cannabis, meaning it's an expensive system to maintain. In another potentially meaningful recommendation for the industry, the panel asked Health Canada to allow pharmacies to distribute cannabis products to patients with a medical authorization. Recommendation 42 asks provinces, territories, and the regulatory authorities for pharmacists to consider supporting the new access channel for patients once federal changes are made. Currently, medical cannabis patients in Canada receive the drug via courier directly from the supplier, grow it themselves, or designate someone to grow it for them. Pharmacy access is not allowed. Outside North America, medical cannabis is almost always distributed in pharmacies, not via physical dispensaries as in the United States. A controversial recommendation in the report calls on the government to maintain the current limit of 10 milligrams of THC per package. Even though illicit cannabis edibles often contain THC with 100 to 200 times that amount. Ultimately, we feel that there are too many unknowns and too much uncertainty about the likely consequences of increasing the amount of THC in these products, according to the report. And therefore, we are of the view that prudence is warranted here, and accordingly, we recommend that the current limit be maintained and that research be undertaken that will fill critical knowledge gaps related to this issue. Daniel Baer, director of Humber College's Center for Social Innovation in Toronto and a drug policy researcher, suggests that maintaining the 10-milligram limit might not be prudent. And as a sidebar, if you'd like to hear a full conversation with Daniel Baer from Humber College talking about legalized cannabis and how education can be better put forth, listen to episode 147 of the Cannabis Podcast. End of sidebar. He said the low THC limit is driving medical cannabis patients to the illicit market. Maintaining such a low THC limit in the non-medical legal market unnecessarily inflates costs for those consumers and maintains one of the only remaining advantages of the illicit market holds over the legal market, he said. Medical consumers often need higher doses of THC or CBD than are commonly found in the retail market. By limiting the edible dose, the committee forces people to either shop illicit sources or try to navigate the unwieldy medical market. And I have to do a bit of a sidebar here. As I was watching some of the coverage of this story come out, and the members of the committee were making all these discussions about 10 milligrams of THC and feeling that it needed to stay the same, there was a huge misunderstanding of how edible cannabis works and that it doesn't work for everyone in the same fashion, in the same manner, and for some it doesn't work at all. They keep making reference to they can control the amount of the THC by regulating against it and suggesting and taxing when there's more THC. You're not understanding how cannabis works. And I think that's a pretty key component. And we'll end the conversation there. So that's the report from mjbizdaily.com on the Cannabis Act Review. And I think they missed the point in a couple of areas.
From the cannabis-infused studio in the clouds, this is the Cannabis Podcast.
And sometimes stories come across the desk that you just wonder, seriously? Like, what were they thinking? This story from Strachan.com, and this is a story written by staff. A woman who says she accidentally handed out illegal cannabis edibles on Halloween in 2022 has received a $5,000 fine from a provincial court. The ruling, handed down in March of 2024, came after charges against her husband were stayed in 2023. Sheldon Chochenoff and his wife, Tammy Sigurder, said they gave out THC candies to multiple people, including young people under the age of 18, on October 31, 2022. Sigurder previously pleaded guilty to charges of supplying cannabis to a young person and possessing cannabis that is not packed, labeled, or stamped. Sigurder told the court that she wasn't aware that she had packed up the illegal edibles because she wasn't wearing her glasses. She said the edibles, which were packaged to look like Nerds and other branded candy, were her husband's property. She also said he did not notice that the candy he was handling out was the cannabis-infused edibles. The couple says they didn't realize what they had done until people began posting pictures of the candy on social media. The husband and wife then provided the police with a detailed statement. Similar infused Nerds knockoff candies made headlines recently, when several young people in Halifax were sent to hospital after consuming the illicit infused candies. And again, the absurdity. Like this, the couple says they didn't realize what they had done. They didn't notice the candy he was handing out was the cannabis-infused edibles. Well, okay, maybe they were really stoned and they just missed it. But seriously? How does that happen? We're heading back to theouts.ca for our next story, this written by David Wiley. The newly released final report from the Legislative Review of the Cannabis Act does a good job pointing out some of the flaws stemming from how Canada has rolled out legalization. Lack of research, little support for medical patients, a financially challenged cannabis industry that's becoming less diverse, and barriers for Indigenous communities are among the issues cited. The expert panel has made 54 recommendations and 11 observations to help rectify what they see as the key issues facing cannabis in Canada, particularly, and unsurprisingly, around health and safety. The good, the bad, and the ugly. The good. Window to the weed, Allow a little clear area in dried flower packaging so consumers can get a sneak peek at their pot. Also recommendations allowing for QR codes and recycling and organic logos. Greater diversity. Recognize the need for Indigenous government-to-government partnerships that create tailor-made legal frameworks for cannabis, as well as re-examining the approach to regulatory fees and grants for equity-deserving groups. Economic allowances. Look at amending federal regulations to allow for direct delivery, reviewing the excise tax model, and reviewing regulations around industrial hemp. Improving patient access. Permit pharmacies to distribute cannabis products to medical patients and rapid advancement of a pathway for cannabis health products containing CBD. Knowledge is power. More research on the therapeutic use of cannabis in Canada, and Health Canada should support a transparent process to identify the specific potential therapeutic applications of cannabis that would benefit most from additional study. The bad. Vanilla packaging. Advising Health Canada to maintain plain packaging and labeling requirements, including overly strict limits on colors and branding. Dr. Freeze. Risking a chilling effect on prescriptions by going after healthcare professionals authorizing high daily cannabis amounts. The ugly. Keeping low limits. Recommending keeping the current 10 mg THC limit on edibles, which is costly for consumers and being undermined by LPs exploiting loopholes anyway. Tax on tax on tax. Suggesting Health Canada charge more tax on high-potency cannabis products to disincentivize their consumption. And if that doesn't work, implement additional regulations. I have to throw a sidebar in on that. This whole idea of increasing the tax on the higher THC content, again, clearly means you don't understand cannabis and how it works. Yeah, sure, the health and safety aspects are there. I get it, and we want to keep the high doses away, but when the high doses are available in the non-legal markets more easily than they are in the legal market, that's a whole other issue. End of sidebar. Published in March, the report was authored by an expert panel appointed by the Minister of Health and the Minister of Mental Health and Addictions. It's dependent on the federal government. Their advice, which generally involves targeted changes to policies and regulations, as well as bolstering support for research, surveillance, and enforcement, aimed at the federal government. Though they say they made some observations that could apply to provinces, municipalities, law enforcement, and healthcare providers. We call for amendments to the Cannabis Act, facilitating a collaborative process with Indigenous communities that would allow those who wish to exert more control over cannabis-related activities in their territories to enter into nation-to-nation agreements with the Government of Canada, based on agreed-upon minimum standards to protect public health and public safety. We also recommend that Health Canada, as well as provinces and territories, take steps to improve their licensing processes to better support Indigenous applicants who wish to participate in the legal cannabis market. Industry representatives raised urgent concerns about their financial viability in the highly competitive market that exists today. These concerns are well-founded. However, any efforts to support the industry must be consistent with the public health and public safety objectives of the Act and not aim to increase the amount of cannabis consumed or the number of Canadians who use cannabis. The Government of Canada should support continued displacement of the illicit market while maintaining measures that protect public health and public safety. Continued monitoring of the legal share of the total market, relying on a combination of information sources that are sensitive to emerging trends, will be important to guide policymaking and priority setting across all levels of government. Health Canada should reduce the financial and administrative burden it places on participants in the legal industry. We recommend Health Canada accelerate its work to reduce unnecessary regulatory burden, informed by the experience gained over the last 5 years. At the outset of legalization, there was a missed opportunity to address the harms of prohibition. The Government of Canada has a role to play in encouraging the participation of marginalized and radicalized groups in the industry, and to support inclusivity and remove barriers to success. Health Canada and its partners should take a comprehensive approach that looks beyond the issuance of a license to include pre- and post-licensing supports, and take a broad view of diversity so that policies and programs consider how to support the inclusion of smaller-sized businesses across the country. We would like to see substantial improvement in the state of knowledge about the differential impacts of legalization on equity-deserving groups, as well as measures taken to address identified issues. One of the issues we heard about most was the amount of THC permitted in edible cannabis products. While industry stakeholders favored increasing the limit to encourage consumers to shift to the legal market, public health stakeholders considered this, citing concerns about the potential impact on child poisonings, cannabis-related emergency room visits, and mental health impacts. Given these concerns, we believe Health Canada should maintain the current limit of 10 milligrams of THC per package in edible cannabis products, and continue to develop the knowledge base in this area to determine whether there are conditions under which the limit could be raised without unduly impacting public health. And I have to do another sidebar here because, as I pointed out in another article, the fact that they are keeping that at a 10 milligram limit is impacting public health because that's going to keep people going to the illicit market to get their higher doses of edibles. Why don't they see that? End of sidebar. The legalization of cannabis has had a profound impact on how Canadians access cannabis. However, patients, healthcare professionals, and medical regulatory bodies, municipalities, and law enforcement, have all voiced concerns about how the system of access to cannabis for medical purposes is working. Many patients are concerned that they do not have reasonable access to cannabis for medical purposes from licensed sellers, while healthcare professionals and medical regulatory bodies continue to have concerns about the lack of evidence to guide clinical decisions. We appreciate that there are still significant gaps in the evidence base and recognize that cannabis is not a suitable treatment for all individuals and all health conditions, nor is its use risk-free. At the same time, there is a need to continue to support patients to access cannabis for medical purposes. 5 years after the legalization of cannabis, many critical knowledge gaps remain. Priorities must be set to guide investments in research, helping to fill gaps in the evidence base and guide future policy decisions. We encourage this priority setting to be done quickly and for the necessary funding to be made available to support this research. In addition to research to fill knowledge gaps, there must be continued surveillance of cannabis-related behaviors and cannabis-related health effects. And as a final sidebar, there continues to be a need for continued research into cannabis and an understanding that we have to make these changes or we're just going to continue spinning our wheels here. I was hoping for more out of this review. I guess I was just a bit naive.
THC, CBD, terpene profiles, what's in me? Oh, please explain to me. Cultivar Corner, Cultivar Corner, oh yeah. Cultivar Corner, please explain this stuff to me.
On Cultivar Corner today, we're heading back to, well, I was going to say Vancouver Island, but that would be wrong. It would be Salt Spring Island that we're heading to today, and we are having and sampling some Magi cannabis. Sounds good, doesn't it? Now, I will be totally transparent. Do have still a hint of a cold, so therefore my nose probably not as right on as it's supposed to be. But I think I'm in good enough shape that you can hear what I'm saying, and you'll be able to understand, and I'll be able to perceive and conceive how... yes, I can still smell the dope. And that's the important part. So as I said, this is Magi Cannabis. What were we doing today? It is their Salt Spring Love Haze. Oh, delicious. Now let me give you the story on Salt Spring by the Magi, first of all. Magi Cannabis is a small-scale, family-owned and operated farm located on Salt Spring Island, BC. As a second-generation craft grower, they have deep love for the cannabis plants they cultivate. That love is evident in the exceptional products they work hard to create. Josh and Nadine have been dedicated to growing fine cannabis since the 1990s. As longtime Islanders, they employ a small team of family and friends that are committed to paying living wages and providing long-term jobs for local residents. There's years of experience in medical cannabis production and recently completed building a Health Canada-approved custom-designed facility for their microcultivation license. At Magi Cannabis, we celebrate the magic of this powerful plant medicine, which can help transform consciousness and support physical and mental health. We have deep respect for the land we live on and the water and energy we use, and are grateful to be able to offer the gift of flowers to discerning consumers. And as I tell you, as I opened up the package for my Salt Spring Love Haze from Magi of Salt Spring Island, delicious aromas, even when I have a bit of a cold. Still picking up those beautiful notes. What are my THCs? THC sitting at 25.4. And surprisingly enough, on the package, this is one of those rare instances where they're not listing the terpenes. Either what they are or how much they are on the packaging. So let's go to the website and see what we can determine from that perspective. So here's how Grown on Salt Spring by the Magi does their cannabis. We're a small crew of growers and trimmers. Many of us are second-generation cannabis producers. The aim is premium flower with a delightful smoking experience. Always looking for a flower that perfectly characterizes the great qualities of its particular variety in aroma, taste, and effect, as well as a consistently smooth burn. Small-batch artisanal cannabis, grown in virgin coir for a consistent burn, 2-week whole plant cold cure for a smooth smoke, hand-trimmed dry to preserve terps and trichomes, and tested and pure non-irradiated. So let's talk about Salt Spring Love Haze. That's the cultivar we have on tap for today. The Rainforest Romancer is what they call it. Let me get my Air Max all ready, so when we are ready to go, it'll be ready to pop. The potency, medium THC of 21 to 26%. Your aroma and flavor is tropical fruit, cream-filled pastry, and springtime forest. A bit of all of those is what's going to find in there. Your main terpenes, terpinolene, osamine, and caryophyllene. Salt Spring Love Haze, the heartthrob of the cannabis world, is like the George Clooney of strains. This cherished super lemon haze cut will have you swooning in no time. Picture yourself in the heart of a Pacific Northwest rainforest, surrounded by ancient trees, and then take a hit. The aroma? It's a tropical fruit fiesta, a cream-filled pastry carnival, and a whispering springtime forest symphony all rolled into one. With terpenolene, osamine, and caryophyllene as the main terpene maestros, it's like your taste buds just won the lottery and are dancing to a rainforest rhythm. Salt Spring Love Haze will sweep you off your feet faster than a rainstorm during an outdoor wedding. That's one of the best descriptions of cannabis I've read in the last 5 years. Thank you for that, Salt Spring Love. Magi, grown on Salt Spring by the Magi. What a great name that is, too. So, I've got a joint ready. The Air Max is warming up. Let me get that up to the proper temperature. There it goes. And let's start with the joint. This is Salt Spring Love Haze, a nice sativa, and I'm looking for a good sativa today. Oh, and as they promised, a nice smooth smoke. Really nice and easy going in. Picking up on some of those fruit and pastry notes on the inhale. On the exhale, maybe a bit of those springtime forests as they're propping up. Looking at my ash, nice and gray. I'm not seeing a lot of darkness there. It's really smooth. I'm not feeling any need to cough at this point, now that I've actually learned how to smoke cannabis. Don't hang on to it so long deep in your lungs. That's a bad thing to do. You might have heard that beep. That tells me that the Air Max is ready to roll, so let's have a taste of this through the vaporizer. Oh, much more of those pastry notes are coming in, a cream-filled pastry carnival. Oh, yeah. Oh, that is really delicious. And back to the joint. So as I say, my THC on this is sitting at 25.4% THC right now. I do not have an indication of what my terps are. And I can't find that anywhere on the website. I'm sure they'll get around to it at some point, but right now there's no terp information other than what the terps themselves are, which, as we've already indicated, are terpinolene, osamine, and caryophyllene. Looking for a nice sativa high today. Want to get some stuff done, so looking for a really nice headstone. Give me that euphoria. Happy eyes can be there if they want to be, but are not a necessary requirement. And just give me some of that energy that I want to get some stuff done today. I am coming off a bit of a cold, so I'm not perhaps in the best shape, but nonetheless, we still smoke cannabis when we have a bit of a cold, don't we? And we have to get over that and figure out how it's going to work for us. And I can feel it's starting to work for me. Oh, there they are. Yep, there's the happy eyes. Come along, gangbusters now. Definitely a sativa from what I can feel so far. Salt Spring Love Haze. I love the name of it. I love the taste of it. Love the smell of it. I'm pretty happy with this one. Salt Spring Magi. I just love that line, that line as well. Grown on Salt Spring by the Magi. Never been to Salt Spring Island. As a guy born in BC, I should get there sometime, because I've heard it's just a beautiful place. We can certainly attest that they grow some pretty fine weed on Salt Spring Island. Salt Spring Love Haze. Mm-hmm. And here it comes on a bit stronger. There's the first hint of any kind of a cough that might have come out. But that was probably my fault more than anything else, because I was trying to hold it in. And you're not supposed to do that. So there's a lot of areas in BC where they're growing some pretty fine weed. We've heard of stuff from Salt Spring Island before. And here is another grower from Salt Spring Island making their mark. Magi. Salt Spring Island, BC. Their Salt Spring Love Haze. Oh, I'm getting a really nice buzz off this now. This is moving heavy into a headstone. A lot of that euphoria. Lots of that clear-headedness that I just want to get some stuff done. I'm not feeling muddy. I'm not feeling like I need to crawl into a couch and sleep for a couple of hours, although perhaps for my cold, that might be a good idea. But generally speaking, getting a pretty uplifting buzz off of this. Glad we tried it. Grown on Salt Spring by the Magi. Salt Spring Love Haze. Very, very tasty. Delicious taste. Delicious aromas. They're really nice looking buds as well. I didn't talk about those. I pulled one of the buds out. I had one bud that was about 2 grams. And the rest of them were of substantive size. Take a look at on my jeweler's loop. Oh, yeah. There's lots of nice trichome fields there. Oh. They apparently know what they're doing on Salt Spring Island. This is just some delightful weed. Salt Spring Love Haze. Giving me a real nice hazy Saturday morning. Actually, I guess it's a Friday, isn't it? That may also be a good indication of how high I have obtained. If you're looking for a really nice sativa and you want something from the island, why don't you try Salt Spring Island? Grown on Salt Spring by the Magi. Salt Spring Love Haze. Mm-mm-mm. Oh, I am falling in love with this high.
Sharing stories about good weed while trying good weed. This is the Cannabis Podcast.
And as we often do, we are off to StratCan.com for our next story. This is written by David Brown. Organigram says it has received a final ruling for Health Canada, again concluding that its Edison Jolts lozenges are an edible and not an extract. The New Brunswick cannabis producer made the announcement near the end of the day on Friday, March 22nd. Organigram launched Edison Jolts in 2021 as the first of a wave of similar products to hit shelves in the following year. The products offered consumers more than the 10 milligram THC limit per package allowed under Health Canada's rules for edibles, arguing that they were classified as extracts and therefore not subject to the same THC limits. By early 2023, Health Canada began telling producers they could no longer sell these products. In March of that year, several other companies confirmed with StratCan that they would also pause production, with Health Canada giving them until May 31, 2023 to cease selling and distributing these products. Organigram filed for a judicial review of that decision in March of 2023, and in August, a judge approved Organigram's application. The review was related to the process Health Canada took to arrive at their decision. The case was then sent back to the regulator for their opportunity to respond. Organigram temporarily ceased selling Jolts for several months in 2023, but began selling them again in October following the approval of the application for review by a judge. Following that announcement from Organigram in November, Health Canada said it was in the redetermination process regarding its initial ruling on Edison Jolts. Health Canada has always maintained that it considers that any product intended to be consumed in the same manner as food is not an extract. The agency sent out a memo to license holders in December 2023, again reiterating this point, noting that the classification of a cannabis product does not mean that the product is compliant with all regulations pertaining to that class of cannabis. License holders are responsible for making sure their cannabis products meet all the applicable requirements of the Cannabis Act and cannabis regulations. This new announcement from Organigram is the most recent evolution of the ongoing issue. The company says it has stopped the production of Jolts in their current format and is currently working with Health Canada on timing to sell through the remaining inventory to provincial distributors. "We're disappointed with the outcome of Health Canada's further review of our Jolts product," said Bina Goldenberg, CEO of Organigram. "Our patented Jolts lozenges were launched over 2 years ago following significant research and development. and was specifically designed to appeal to consumers looking to access regulated and tested ingestible products from the legal market that met their needs for potency and price. We are currently assessing our options to continue to meet the needs of consumers while retaining them within the legal market. Organigram reported $2.9 million in sales of their Edison Jolt lozenges in their most recent quarterly report of Q1 of 2024. So there you go. Health Canada has finally ruled Jolts are indeed an edible.
From a studio high above the clouds of the Okanagan Valley, this is the Cannabis Podcast.
And to MJBizDaily.com we go for our next story. Canadian Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland was warned last fall about systemic financial distress facing the country's cannabis producers, including skyrocketing tax debt and widespread insolvencies. The calamities facing the industry were spelled out in briefing materials obtained through an access to information request and shared with MJBizDaily. One of the documents included with a briefing note, drafted by an official within the Department of Finance Canada's Tax Policy Branch, updates Freeland on the financial state of Canada's adult-use market. According to the report, it remains the case that after 5 years of legalization, there are no licensed producers of legal cannabis products that are consistently profitable. The briefing note titled, Update on Financial Distress in Canada's Production Industry, documents a litany of issues facing the sector, including unfair profits earned by some provincially owned cannabis wholesalers, snowballing unpaid excise taxes by cannabis producers, almost no sustainable profits earned by cannabis companies, a disproportionate number of cannabis producers entering creditor protection and even bankruptcy, falling prices made worse by inventory liquidations by companies that go under. A separate memorandum marked secret was sent to the Minister of Finance and was almost entirely redacted. The financial distress briefing note came amid the industry's lobbying efforts to ease taxes levied against cannabis producers. Industry group Cannabis Council of Canada told MJBizDaily it had briefed officials at the Department of Finance Canada and Health Canada many times about the lopsidedness in marijuana taxes and regulation, but had limited success. It's the federal government's model. Over and over, we suggested so many ways to fix this: lowering the tax rate, fixing the clumsy excise stamp administration, removing taxes for patients, and more, Rick Savone, Cannabis Council Chair, said when asked by MJBizDaily to comment on the briefing materials. The federal government's design of the program is flawed in so many levels, but it's their own design. Maybe the next federal budget will finally acknowledge our industry's financial struggles by delivering concrete actions, as Minister Freeland has done recently for other regulated industries. The briefing note said that dried cannabis, which represents the majority market share, is still subject to excise duties of $1 per gram or 10% of the wholesale price, whichever is higher. And the report acknowledges, however, that in practice, the 10% rate rarely applies. That might be the first time the government acknowledged the excise tax is usually $1 per gram of dry cannabis, which is generally much higher than 10% of the wholesale price. The report to Freeland shows that Canada's cannabis producers increasingly are falling behind on their federal excise tax obligations. Federally licensed cannabis producers owed the Canada Revenue Agency $279 million as of June 2023. The briefing materials for Freeland also acknowledge the disproportionate number of cannabis companies that have filed for creditor protection. In addition, 14 cannabis companies filed for creditor protection in 2022 under the Companies Creditors Arrangement Act, representing 36% of all CCAA filings last year. Another 12 companies have filed a concern with the Office of the Superintendent of Bankruptcy in 2023. The federal report notes that some provincial governments are extracting more profit from the cannabis industry than expected, while almost no consistent profit is earned in the private sector. Provincial governments receive money from the cannabis industry mainly in two ways. Most provinces sign coordinated cannabis taxation agreements, in which the federal government collects the cannabis excise tax and redistributes roughly three-quarters of it back to provincial coffers, through province-owned wholesalers, or in Quebec's case, province-owned retail stores. So, more focus on why this industry is not getting the adjustments that some other industries are. The federal government was aware of it, but apparently they chose to do nothing about it, or at least just let it sit on the shelf and hopefully they'll forget about it. That's not the way this industry is going to get better. I thought it was interesting on February 14th when the government released their tiny little bulletin announcing that cannabis consumption spaces would now be allowed near cannabis stores with certain regulations and restrictions, of course. They also published Cannabis What's Legal, an update on February 14th of our cannabis laws in British Columbia. And I thought it was kind of worth a chance to go back and let's remember exactly where we are and what our current context is. The legal age, you must be 19 years or older to buy, use, possess, or grow non-medical cannabis in BC. But to protect your health, keep young people safe, and help prevent crime in your community, non-medical cannabis is sold exclusively at government-run stores, licensed private retailers, and the BC government's online store. The BC Liquor Distribution Branch operates public retail stores and an online store. The Liquor and Cannabis Regulation Branch is responsible for licensing and monitoring private retail stores. Licensed private retailers may sell cannabis and cannabis accessories. They may not sell liquor or tobacco or any items other than cannabis and cannabis accessories. Possession. Adults 19 plus can carry up to 30 grams of dried non-medical cannabis or its equivalent in a public place. In addition, adults cannot possess any more than 1,000 grams of dried non-medical cannabis or its equivalent in a non-public place, such as at your home. This limit is per household and is based on the expected yield from 4 cannabis plants. So they're expecting, as a bit of a sidebar, they're expecting 1,000 grams out of 4 cannabis plants. That's as much as you can have at home. Public use. Adults 19 plus can generally smoke or vape cannabis in public spaces where tobacco smoking and vaping are allowed. But remember, secondhand smoke can be harmful and irritating to people, especially children, so be mindful when smoking in public spaces. Smoking and vaping cannabis are not allowed in the following public places: playgrounds, sports fields, skate parks, swimming pools and spray pools, or any decks or seating areas associated to these places. Public buildings, workplaces, or common areas of apartments, condos, or dormitories, and within 6 meters of air intakes, windows, and doorways attached to these places. Within 6 meters of bus stops, transit shelters, train stations, ferry docks, and similar places. Regional and municipal parks, except for designated campsites. Provincial parks, except for areas identified or designated. Health board properties, except in designated smoking areas. Registered hotel guests may smoke or vape cannabis in their hotel room if the hotel allows it. Community care facilities, assisted living residences, and hospitals may designate specific rooms in which residents or patients can smoke or vape cannabis. And legislation. With public health and safety top of mind, the province has legislation to provide legal, controlled access to non-medical cannabis in British Columbia. And there are 3 separate acts. The Cannabis Control and Licensing Act aims to protect children and youth, promote health and safety, keep the criminal element out of cannabis, keep BC's roads safe, and support economic development. 2, the Cannabis Distribution Act establishes a public wholesale distribution monopoly and public government-run retail sales, both in stores and online. And 3, changes to the Motor Vehicle Act gives police tools to remove drug-impaired drivers from the road and deter drug-affected driving. So there's a recap on the legality of cannabis in British Columbia in 2024. And you'll find links to all of that back at the Cannabis Podcast, and you can read them for yourself. And once again, thank you so much for being here. I truly appreciate the fact that you are a listener of the Cannabis Podcast. Let's finish up with a couple of jokes to give you a smile as you finish up. What do you call a stoner's autobiography? The highs and lows. Why did the cannabis plant get an award? It had excellent growth potential. What's a stoner's favorite outdoor activity? Weed whacking. What do you call a cannabis plant with an attitude? A grass hole. I'm sorry about these. I know they're painful, but I feel I have to do them anyways. And that wraps it up for episode 149 of the Cannabis Podcast.
From the cannabis-infused studio, high above the Okanagan Valley, this was the Cannabis Podcast.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Are you looking for the next great cannabis business to invest in? Then you need to check out the MJ Bulls podcast. Hi, I'm Dan Humiston. Join me each week as I speak to both cannabis entrepreneurs who are raising capital and cannabis investors who are investing capital. Our 10-minute episodes are perfect for the busy investor. Start listening to the MJ Bulls podcast today, wherever you listen to podcasts, and who knows, maybe you'll discover the next cannabis unicorn.